Bringing Jesus back into the church. Martin Luther King did it. We can too, and we should. It's better than a balloon on your front lawn. Hey, this is Father Boskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, physical, psychological, and everything in between. Looking at life through the most ancient of all Christian fabrics, Armenian Orthodoxy. This is Next Step, episode 555, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. Here, Father Voskan provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchise members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Are you supercharged from that event that took place this past weekend? Listen, today I'm going to be talking about all kinds of stuff, and I wanted to start off with this because this was a supercharger for me. Yes, we're going to get on to Lady Gaga, actually, today. We're going to be talking about some of the events. We're going to talk about Jesus away in the manger. We're going to be talking about, well, things that you couldn't even believe at the beginning of this podcast. But before we go there, I wanted to start off about this supercharger. Yes, and we will definitely talk about that viral video that's going on about vestments. We've been receiving so many comments. And some of these, well, let me just, how about this? Are you ready for this? Can I say some idiots too? Idiots who just couldn't understand what that's about, why a priest would want to explain what vestments are. Anyway, let me start off with the supercharge, okay? The supercharge happened on Sunday. We saw a total eclipse of the moon, a lunar eclipse. And it happened, I believe Los Angeles was, we got the best of it. And unfortunately, it was just short-lived because the clouds rolled in. But we did see it go from partial to total eclipse. We did see the blood moon. We did see it turn red. And it was just fascinating. We were like, I don't know if you're familiar with that show. It was called The Addams Family. It was based on some literature that was written by somebody, Adams with two D's, and they would go out into the one of their memorable moments would be they would go out in the evening and moonbathe, looking up at the stars and the moon. And I felt like the Addams Family because we were out there in mass with our whole family out in the backyard and watching this total lunar eclipse. And it occurred to me that, you know, as we're looking up, you're seeing the curvature of the earth because the moon is now falling into the earth's shadow. A couple of years ago, we went and saw the total solar eclipse, in which case the moon blocked out the sun. In this case, the sun's light that is getting to the moon is being blocked out by the earth's shadow, and it shows that we're moving and there is motion. And the ancients looked up at this and they understood about themselves. I can't remember if it was ancient Greeks or ancient Chinese astronomers who looked up and figured out that we must be standing on a ball, that the earth must be ball-like because of the consistency of the curve that they would see from lunar eclipse to lunar eclipse. In other words, if you were on a disc, if the earth was a disc, it wouldn't make that kind of shadow. If you were on a flat earth, as so many people say, it wouldn't make that kind of shadow. So they figured out that the earth must be a ball. And this is like centuries ago, centuries, millennium ago. They figured this out just by looking up at the moon. Now think about people who look up and they see these kind of phenomena and then start ascribing different things. And that too did happen. People look up and they see these as perhaps as omens. that the light of the sun or the light of the moon has gone out, because that's what it actually looks like. It looks like the moon was lit and then all of a sudden it's off, because you see it up there. You see the moon up there. But it is the reflection of light. This is how powerful the sun is. When you see it during the eclipse, what you're seeing is the reflection of light from the sun on the earth reflecting onto the moon. That very faint, faint object that you see is a reflection of our light going up there. Whereas usually the moon, as you see it, is the reflection of the sun's light. So the ancients figured this out. They figured out that we are on a sphere, on a ball-like planet, or object, let's say. And unfortunately, there were people that also ascribed some negativity, omen, that this might be an omen. I remember my grandmother talked about Halley's Comet. Its last appearance was in 1910, and she remembered it, and she would talk about it. It was an omen of things to come, and certainly right after that, the massacres took place, the deportations, which blew up into a full-scale genocide. And she would always talk about that comet, this bright star with the tail on it in the sky, that during the day they would see this star. And of course, in 1986, we were so excited. It was the return of Halley's Comet. Every 75, 76 years, it returns in its path by the Earth. And what a dud it was. It was a major dud. It was so sad. We had looked forward to it. And 86, it came, and that was it. You saw it very briefly in the night sky. I remember there were some other comets, Halley Bob, I think, which were much brighter than Halley's. But Halley's was the event that kind of let us down. We did see pictures of it that were taken by telescopes, but the 86 appearance was bad. And the reason I'm saying this is because consistency. Now, Halley's Comet comes by the Earth every 75 years, but it's not consistent in its appearance. But the lunar eclipse is consistent in that you see the Earth's shadow and you see the roundness of it, leading the ancients to believe that this was a ball. Now, I bring this up because can we take a look at some of the things that are happening all around us and understand some of the deeper concepts? For instance, the video that I just recently made, and it was released Friday by the Western Diocese. There'll be a link on today's show notes if you missed it. It is a video about the vestments in the church, and it starts off about vesting, about Jesus was vested with the light. And there are so many beautiful metaphors that it talks about in this video. And as I look on not only this, but all the AC101, AC202 videos, I understand them to be really the fundamentals. It's not where my head's at right now, be honest with you. I make those videos. I've shared this with you many times. Where we are at the next step, where we are at the Bible studies, where we are, this is where I'm at right now. I love to go beyond it. And this is what we're going to visit in the second portion of today's show, going beyond it, making it real. I'm going to be sharing with you a story of a pastor who takes up guns. Now, you know where we come from about guns, and we talk about violence and an end of violence. An interesting story coming up in today's second portion. But what we've tried to present are the fundamentals, basics that you need to understand to get to where we are in the next step, to talk about how do you apply what you have learned. And so it's important that we talk about those vestments. It's important that we talk about what the fundamentals of our belief are, because they're basically the metaphysical equivalent, or the equivalent, as metaphysics would be, to all of life. The very basic fundamentals that you need to know, the building blocks on which we build everything else. And so if you go back a little bit, a couple weeks ago, okay, we started off the new year, and I shared with you a homily that I gave at Christmas Eve. And it was about bringing Jesus in. I told you one of the most ugliest things that I see I know you can relate to this. It's part of modern society is we decorate our houses. And part of that decorations has now come into the balloon phenomena. I know you've seen it, okay? We have these giant balloons that we make in front of our houses, shaped like Jesus, Joseph, and Mary, the manger scene, Santa Claus, the reindeers, and we put these huge things that need power by a fan. So you've got these big fan motors going throughout the night. Well, they're not that bad, but if you get close enough, you can hear them. And they fill these big balloons with air, constant supply of air, so they're blown up. Manger scenes, and probably one of the ugliest things that I've ever witnessed is the day after when those fans are off, and you just got massive melted plastic on your front lawn, and it's just in different colors, and it's really kind of spooky too for little kids. You know, you go back, what is that, mommy? What is that? Oh, that's just Jesus all melted away on your front lawn, or that's Santa Claus's reindeer. That's the nose, yeah, that's the nose, that little red thing. And these are horrible. They're scary. What we used to call as kids Merod's balloon phenomena. They were. Have you ever seen one of those dying balloons? They're just like, they're spooky. And on Christmas Eve, I was talking about this during my homily at the cathedral. And I shared with the people that, you know, one of the things that I love about Christmas Eve, that on this night, after we have gone through this whole season of Jesus on our front lawn and melting Jesuses and Jesuses in different scenarios, on postcards, on greeting cards, on billboards, on bus stops, and seeing the images, it is just beautiful on Christmas Eve when we bring Jesus back into the church. This is you may think that this is very fundamental, like, well, didn't Jesus start off at the church? No! Jesus has been kidnapped, has been taken out of the church. And we've forgotten that. And we've bought into this whole thing that somehow Jesus exists outside. And, you know, this last Monday was Martin Luther King Day here in the United States. We commemorate the civil rights leader who happens to be a reverend of the gospel. Not only happens to be, but he demanded that people talk about him as a reverend, in other words, a minister of the gospel. And a new book has come out called The Seminarian. Highly recommended. It's a wonderful book talking about his seminary years, about what shaped him, basically the building blocks of what made Martin Luther King the civil rights leader that he was. And you see what an incredible faith this man had and what that faith was all about. So, we're talking about bringing Jesus back into the church, and you're saying, well, isn't it obvious that Jesus is in the church? No, it isn't. And let me share with you this story that happened just this past couple of weeks. Lady Gaga, okay? Phenomenal. Wonderful entertainer. People love her. Yeah, she's great. Well, she put out a statement a couple days ago. Lady Gaga, and I'll just read it to you. It's probably easier than trying to paraphrase this. Lady Gaga slams Mike Pence as the worst representative of what it means to be a Christian. Okay, now you know me. I'm not a defender of Pence nor of Trump. But here's Lady Gaga that in her show in Las Vegas is talking about somebody else being the worst representative, Pence being the worst representative of Christianity. Okay, so now all of a sudden we've given her this credibility, so much so that she is answering for Christianity by going on the offensive and hitting somebody else for what's wrong with you because you're not the Christian then you should be. It kind of reminds me of this video that I made, by the way, this the AC202 vestments. It's interesting because, like, people are blogging about it. They're talking about it, and some of the negative comments are like, is this guy really a priest or is he an actor? And then after that, they go on and they go, well, this guy can't take the sacraments seriously. Those kind of insults hurt because they come from idiots who have no clue about what you have gone through. They have no clue of what you go through on a daily basis. When you see the decay of humanity and you see that people are far and far away from Christ and from the beauty of God, and you need to find means by which you can share this good news with them. And instead of applauding these things, they're sitting there and saying, well, this isn't right because he smiled and he's a Christian. He shouldn't smile. Oh, yeah. That was like last Sunday, the Bible passage. It's one of my favorite ones. It's the first miracle of Jesus changing the water to wine. And there's always somebody in the crowd. Whenever you say this story, they giggle. Jesus drank wine. Woo-hoo-hoo. You know, we got to get out of this kind of stereotyping of what Christianity is about. Jesus changed the water into wine because they needed wine at that celebration. That's all. If the guy was dying in the desert, if he was dying of thirst, crawling through the desert, Jesus would have taken the wine and changed it to water because that's what he needed. That's how simple it is. That's what the story is about. Not about it's okay to drink and consume alcohol. Or Jesus loved, Jesus was a hidden recovering alcoholic. No, you know, it's about Christ taking care of the needs at the moment. Very, very important story. And so too, there are people who just don't get it, whether it's vestments or whatever it is. And what's happening is, we're allowing that Jesus, you know, it's fine. He's a plastic blow-up on our lawn. That's okay. Don't bring him back into church, you know. No, this is where Jesus belongs. And the church needs to belong. And think about what we celebrated this past week. Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. A very big celebration for a civil rights leader who went by the title of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. What was his strength? He took Jesus Christ and brought him back into the church and said that as a church, we have this mission. As a church, we need to go forward because Jesus Christ demanded it. Do you understand where I'm going with this? Once you tap into Jesus Christ as the Savior, as somebody who is your church's leader, you have no other course to follow but to follow the leader. And so you think about, well, like, you know, okay, well, what about Lady Gaga? She made this comment, yeah. Very easy to criticize other people, but how about this? Lady Gaga, a couple weeks ago, right? She was in the news. Why? Well, because she had recorded a song with another recording artist named R. Kelly. And this guy got into some trouble about sexual misconduct. So she wanted to distance herself from this guy. Okay. Fair enough, right? So she was upset because, you know, now that everything's being streamed. Music is being streamed. And she wanted to pull her song that she had made with him back in 2012, 2013, whenever it was, with R. Kelly. She was upset because she didn't like what he stood for right now. So she wants to pull the song. Okay, that's in her rights, right? Until you find out what the song is. The name of the song that she made with the guy, Do What You Want With My Body. Okay, you made this song with this guy, and now he's gotten accused of some things. It was okay back in 2012, and now this title. And you know what? The song, the reasons for it, there were so many other things because there were accusations made back in 2012. They were trying to exonerate. They were trying to... It doesn't matter. Look at the name of that song, okay? Do What You Want With My Body. Now you're getting upset. You want it pulled. All of a sudden, this is the person who is now talking on behalf of Christianity, and she stops everything and says, Michael Pence is the worst example of Christianity. And these are the mudslingers, right? When is the turn for the church to take Christ back into the church and say, wait a minute, now this is what Jesus Christ is. We believe in one God, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. This is how we understand Jesus. Well, that's easier said than done. And I'll be the first one to admit that. That's where we're going to go in the second portion of today's podcast. Because what I'm talking about is a very, very difficult statement. And it's probably what's messing us up. Right now, when you look at the world, you see all of these things that are happening. I mean, some of the biggest things that are happening in the Christian world, for instance, is the schism that is now taking place within Orthodoxy itself, with the Patriarch Bartholomew giving that autocephalous, I believe it is, designation to the Ukrainian church. The Ukrainian Orthodox have split off from the Russian Orthodox, and they're talking about a schism on the scale of the Great Schism of the 10th century. And then here we are, very humble little Armenians on the corner of the planet, talking about our little Armenian Orthodoxy and really not having much idea of what that Orthodoxy really means and can mean for the times. I'm going to share with you a small little story that came out of the TED Talks to kind of like wrap up what I'm talking about right now. TED Talks, this is interesting because TED, it's an acronym, TED, stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. It's one of the podcasts that I subscribe to. I listen to TED Talks, TED Radio Hour. It's 1 hour. Just interesting, fascinating things. And so what did I hear the other day about forgiveness? Forgiveness. Wait a minute. Technology, entertainment, design. TED Talks. And they're talking about forgiveness. Well, what was the story? It intrigued me. I had to listen to it. And it was an interview with Sue Klebold. Sue's the mother of Dylan Klebold, one of two shooters at Columbine High School. This was almost 20 years ago. She talks about the struggle to understand his actions. Her son takes out people, shoots people, and then shoots himself, kills. Horrific, horrific. It was one of the early incidents of shooting that triggered all kinds of stories about shooting. And we're going to be talking about one of those people in the second portion of today's show. So hang on for that. But I do want to play you this little portion. Because in it, she talks about something, well, that is very dear and near to our heart. As next steppers, as in his shoesers, and you'll hear it. Here's Sue Klebold from the TED Talk. There'll be a link on today's show notes for the entire talk.
After the Columbine shootings, Sue's entire life unraveled. For years, she and her husband dealt with lawsuits, which forced them into bankruptcy. They eventually split up. In 2001, Sue was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then she began to suffer from extreme anxiety and panic attacks. And all of this while trying to understand and to process what Dylan did. Has forgiveness been something that you've thought a lot about over the years?
My synonym for forgiveness is empathy. Hmm. For me, what forgiveness is, it is the ability to understand and put yourself in the other person's shoes to see what they were thinking, experiencing, and feeling, because the need to forgive disappears once we have understanding. It has helped me to do the research I've done on brain health to try to understand in my thinking that Dylan didn't merely choose to do this in the same way that you and I would make this decision as we're sitting here talking.
Yeah.
And if I had to explain suicide to a child, if someone lost an uncle, for example, what we would say to a child is, Your uncle became sick in his brain, and he couldn't think the way we think. And because of that, he hurt himself, or in Dylan's case, he hurt other people. And that's sort of the way I've processed this.
That was from the TED Talk, Sue Klebold, talking about her son. Did you catch it? Forgiveness means walking in his shoes. Now, it took somebody on TED stage to talk about forgiveness. Something we've been talking about, we've been sharing about, well, not only for the last 10, 15 years since we've been doing the podcast, not only since 777 when we did the first forgiveness conference, but something we've been talking about since time zero when Jesus Christ said, forgive. Forgive, it's the only way to live. And we understand it. We've been talking about it. It's a straight Jesus concept. But now it reaches to TED stage. Technology? No. Entertainment? I hope it's not about entertainment. I hope it's more than entertainment. Design? The design of things? Well, maybe. Take a break right now. Let's listen to the song of the day. Be back in a few minutes, and we're going to be talking about, well, just about bringing Jesus back in, okay? Udi Hurant, there's something that you might not hear otherwise. That is off of an album of his. I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do check him out. He was one of the early Udis of the 20th century. Remarkable, remarkable player. His CDs, his albums, I should refer to them as albums. They existed as albums long before CDs were around, were have been published through traditional crossroads. And I would strongly suggest and really push you to check out their entire catalog of music. Just some great, great stuff out there that often gets forgotten, that often gets missed and forgotten. Woody Hirant is a story in himself. I'll put some links on today's show notes. I would love to do a show one day about some of this music that we occasionally listen to and play and share with you and highlight. I was at my Hanami's house, my in-laws, I guess. Hanami doesn't translate to in-laws, does it? Anyway, anyway, let's use the generic in-laws. I was with my Hanami's. Let's use the generic Hanami, okay? I was at my Hanami's house. We were playing Nardi, backgammon, tavlu, whatever way you want to say it. And we were just listening to Woody Hirant in the background. It doesn't get any better, you know? And I just heard this song and I said, oh, I had missed playing this album for a long time. So I said, it's the song of the week for sure, definitely. So I hope you enjoyed it, Woody Hirant at his best. And there'll be a link on today's show notes. Do check out all of the information about this incredible musician.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me. And before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave.
Oh, yeah.
And go home to my Lord and be free.
We're talking about bringing Jesus back into the church. And not those dying balloons out on your front lawn, but really as a living entity, somebody who touches you with life, with love, and changes your life, makes your life different. That's the key. That's what we've tried to do from the very beginning. And all of our entire ministry, what is the next step, actually? What is the next step you're going to take? It's taking all of this that we've learned and applying it to our lives, making Jesus real in our lives. There is a plastic Jesus I've shared with you that hangs in my office for several years. It's been hanging there. It's a plastic bobblehead Jesus, and I keep it as a reminder that that's not what our faith is about. Don't ever let it be plastic. Don't ever let it be synthetic. Let it be real. And here you just heard it a few minutes ago, right? On the TED Talks, talking about forgiveness, a straight Jesus concept, right? Forgive one another. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. It's right into the prayer that he teaches us. And we've shared with you the 7 times 7. How many times should I forgive? Not 7 times, but 7 times 70. 7 times 77. 7 times 777. In other words, forgive. Don't keep track of it. Forgive. But when TED Talk takes it over, you realize that Jesus has gone outside of the church. Technology, entertainment, design. And now listen to what she says. She says that forgiveness is walking in the shoes of others. Where did you get this podcast from today? In His Shoes. What is In His Shoes about? It's about feeling the pain of others. So do you understand how all this is coming together? And it's really easy to talk about, but it's difficult to implement. What Sue Claybold talks about in this entire talk, and I strongly suggest listen to the entire thing, what she talks about is something incredible and very difficult to do. And enter now Brian Moore. Brian Moore happens to be a pastor. He's a pastor, a man of God, who had always talked about no guns until an event takes place in his life. There was a fascinating expose done in Time magazine. I believe it was December of last year. And I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. Oh, It is so good. About this phenomena that's taking place, primarily here in America, but I believe that that violence is contagious as well, and it does permeate into all kinds of societies. But we have a phenomena right now with this affluence that we have, people buying guns and using them haphazardly, using them as means of expression in such a negative and violent and ugly way. And Columbine, yes, you heard Sue Klebold talk about that a few minutes ago, that little brief. But what happens when you have made a commitment to stay away, to practice nonviolence, and then something evil and ugly happens? I heard this small story by Brian Moore, and I wanted to share it with you today. It is about a pastor who comes to terms with what it means to pick up the gun, so much so that he became an instructor. Yeah, an instructor, a gun instructor. This is from the Time site. There'll be a link on the show notes to it.
My name is Dr. Brian Moore. I am the fifth time grandson of Nat Turner. I am a direct descendant. The African-American experience in America has been a difficult one when it comes to guns. Pastoring in Illinois in the East St. Louis area, which, you know, once upon a time, East St. Louis was known as the murder capital of the nation. We were in church on a Wednesday. We were all standing in a circle. We were all praying, and we were holding hands. God, of course, was, as we call it, in the house. We felt God in the house. We felt the presence of God in the house. Suddenly, the door crashed open. A young lady came through the door screaming. She was screaming, "Pastor," looking directly at me. As she came through the door, she was falling because she was running. As she fell, she began to crawl toward me, constantly screaming. One thing I recognize is that real screams don't sound the same. Unscripted screaming don't sound the same as they do on the movies. And real fear doesn't look the same as it does on the movies. Real fear distorts and twists your face. Real screams sound as though that you're choking because you run out of air in you, and the fear is so great you barely take a breath. Anyway, I noticed that this young lady I was looking at was desperately trying to get to me away from something else. I noticed that her underwear was down by her ankles and she was bleeding. I noticed also that her head was shaved bald and not well either, patches of hair hanging. Other parts of her scalp were bleeding. When I finally reached her, I recognized exactly who she was. She was a longtime member of mine, a member who was there on Wednesdays or any day that the church doors opened. And what had happened was she had been raped, sodomized, and shaved bald on the parking lot of the church. Now, my issue was and is this. God is in the house. We're all praying. Pentecostal people, they run around, they jump around, they shout, they express themselves all kinds of ways spiritually. So God is in the house. My question to God would have been at that moment, and has been since that moment, if you're in the house, why didn't you just step out on the parking lot? And that's what prompted my becoming an instructor, because I can not and nor will I ever minister only in one way. I was raised that God was a magician. He was a protector in the black community. When there was a time where we needed to hope and pray that way, because, of course, there was a time we were being raped and hung and castrated. We needed to believe that God was our protector. Well, there was in me before this experience, and now this is me afterwards. Those things are incredibly, especially in my quiet time, those are the things that come to mind to make up the sum total conclusions of how I think and who I am now, even my belief. I feel a responsibility to those people, especially to the women. The most unprotected, devalued, unappreciated person under the sun today, of course, is a black woman. We were in negotiations for a Southern Baptist building. The Southern Baptist wanted to send us a message. The white male, the predator who did this, wanted to send us a direct message. And of course, he did. So we're no longer the same kind of church. No. My greatest conflict within me has been since that time. It's not how I feel about God, but how does God feel about me? It's an odd, eerie kind of feeling to face that truth every day after being in ministry for 30 years. having a legacy of ministry. Nat Turner, of course, was a minister. And down through the years, all ministers in my family. So sometimes I feel as though that I'm letting my congregation, my members down by feeling this way. But it is something I can't help. Yes, my faith is questioned. I question it every day. I analyze it every day. I critique it every day. And I try to find different ways to renew it. But that experience was absolutely, completely, utterly horrible, especially with all of the sounds and the feelings and the atmosphere, the taste and the feelings of the atmosphere that was included, especially evil being so close when God is in the house. So many things come along with this title, and I question every day if I'm sufficient, efficient, and able to do it. Able to do it. Hell, qualified. How many things have I said that went wrong or has to be reproached now after that experience? Because there was a time where I taught the Bible is your sword. God, of course, is your protector. You know how many things I've had to go back, find explanations for, just so that I could continue to speak relevantly without becoming bitter or seeming doubtful. This legacy of Nat Turner has been an experience. When I was younger, I did not embrace it because I felt as though, you know, down through history, the way history wrote him, you know, they wrote him as almost a murderer, a killer of women and children, instead of a revolutionary. So when I sit in the classroom, it felt as though everybody was looking at me. But now, yes, I do. I embrace it because it is who I am. I'm definitely not the second coming, but I am responsible for the people who confide in me and give me power over their lives.
Brian Moore coming to us off of the Time magazine Guns in America issue. It's very difficult to listen to because you realize how events change and shape us. It's very difficult to listen to because you understand that theoretical is one thing, but when brought up against the challenge, it's very difficult to put that theory into action. Put away the sword. He who lives by the sword dies by the sword, says our Lord Jesus Christ. He says it as an axiom. He doesn't say it as a warning. In other words, put away the sword. I'm telling you to do this in defense of me. You don't need to defend me with the sword. Because whoever lives by the sword dies by the sword. That's an axiom. It's a truth. If you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. And we carry that around as a very basic tenet of Christianity. Nonviolence. And as I've said many times, I think this is such an appropriate topic, especially this week in the shadow of the Martin Luther King holiday, because he lived by this nonviolent resistance. So did Gandhi. So Jesus Christ giving us the inspiration for that. But when it comes down to push comes to shove, and Martin King said this too, it's very difficult to like your enemies. I'm so glad that Jesus said, love your enemies, because I don't know if I could love somebody who's trying to kill my children, who's trying to bomb my house. And we come up against the reality, as we did with Pastor Brian Moore, right? And it's so easy to say, yeah, we believe in this, and now push comes to shove. He's up against the reality. And he takes up the sword. He takes up the gun. And you say, well, put up or shut up. If you're not going to live that way, then shut up. I would rather say, rather than shut up, put up or at least think about it. At least be square with your conscience. Because these are very difficult. They're not black and white statements. And going back to the first part of today's show, when I talked about some people who get on these ultra extravagant places. I'm not a defender of Pence, nor of Trump, nor do I want to be, nor will I ever be. But I'll tell you something. It's very easy to sit there and criticize and say this man is not Christian. But you need to be able to look at your own self in the mirror and understand, what does that Christianity mean for you? At what point is it in sync with the message that Jesus Christ proclaimed? As I shared with you this morning, I woke up and there was banter on the internet blogs about what I had done on the videos. So much praise. Actually, last Sunday was so beautiful. There was a young woman videoing me during my sermon, and I thought, who is this? Somebody's videoing me on their iPhone. As I'm talking, I'm going, what is this all about? You know, and then sure enough, afterwards, after church, I went and I introduced myself to this young lady who happened to be visiting from Moscow. Came a week ago, found out that I was going to be celebrating the Divine Liturgy at the particular church. She had come on video because she is a follower of ours on the internet. And so you realize that, okay, so your messages are getting out there and there are people that are listening and there are people that are processing that. But that process is not always positive. You'd like it to be. Yeah, we all like the praise. But it hurts when you hear people that are critical without understanding. And I went through that this past week, you know. Seeing that banter on the internet, seeing the blogs, reading them, and who the hell does this guy think he is? Taking our vestments and producing these shows and sharing that with the people. God forbid that the people should understand something. Keep them in darkness. Of course, that's how I'm reading it, because that's what they're saying. And so it's very important to be able to make it practical, make it real. And that's what we try to do with the next step. And at the same time, keeping the integrity. And we have reached a point where we see that push comes to shove. You've got this beautiful message. Can you make it work? Can you make it work in reality? This week, being Martin Luther King week, weekend, We just celebrated last weekend, but this week, while in the shadow of that, I think about this daily. I read, and I've been listening to his speeches. Here was a master who was able to take the message of Jesus Christ, put it into the church, and let it radiate from the church. The church becomes the leader by which the rest of society is finding and defining itself. We have that opportunity right now as part of the most ancient and oldest traditions of Christianity, not to go by the whims of a few people, not to go by what may seem real, but by using God's given wisdom in our head, by understanding ourselves as citizens of this world, by understanding Jesus as the first nonviolent revolutionary, by understanding Jesus as someone who came and gave us this incredible opportunity to rise from ourselves, from our nature, and to be in touch with the divine. Opportunities for justice, opportunities for healing, for feeding the body as well as the soul. They're all in our hands. And we have this opportunity to walk in the shoes of others, to forgive, to take the greatest power on this planet right now, the power of love, and to implement it in a society, in a world where it is so, so necessary. And this is our challenge. This is what it means to walk in the shoes of others. This is what Armadoxy is about. This is what the next step is for all of us. Let's take a break right now. Okay, here's Susie to tell you, well, how you can take the next step with us. I'll be back in a couple minutes.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of you for those wonderful notes you send me, those kind comments. It was so beautiful the other day. At the night of the eclipse, I got a wonderful, wonderful text from one of our listeners, Seza. She wrote to me and said, "Are you watching the eclipse?" And it just made me so happy because, yeah, that's what we're all about. And, you know, it was interesting because I went through the text and I found that, yeah, when she was in Cyprus, she was sending me the same message. Hey, we're watching an eclipse over here. And that's what this community is all about. That's what the Next Step is about. That's what our apostle ministry in Issues is all about, is really reaching out to places that we otherwise wouldn't be able to. We have an opportunity via this technology, via these means that God has given us, to really reach out and create that virtual community of believers. Virtual in the sense, not that we want to stay away from the physical. Yeah, actually, it would be beautiful if we were all together. Nothing more that I would want than all of us be together. But just imagine it. There's a woman who's come from Moscow, and she's sitting in a church and talking to you because she's able to see your videos over there. Imagine there's people in Armenia right now that are watching these videos. I get stopped in Etchmiadzin, and this was like in October, by a guy who all he wanted to do was take a selfie with me. And I'm going, whoa, this is like wild. Like, where does this come from? And it's just beautiful, because it's not about, yeah, the great Father Boskin. It's about using this technology to get a bigger story out there. And that's the story of God loving us, caring about us, and giving us an opportunity to really reconcile with one another, with ourselves, and ultimately, in so doing, we reconcile with God. That's what this ministry is about. I hope today's episode is a little bit different, because I think all of my episodes are different. Do you agree? Huh? Yeah. I know you're shaking your head over there. They are different. Today's was different because I felt just a need for us to bring Jesus back into the church, place him into the church, and let that be our guiding force to get that message out. So this is what it's about. And when you support In His Shoes, when you support these ministry, that's what you're supporting. You're saying this is the direction that we want to go in. So thank you very much for all your nice notes, your expressions, and I'd love to hear from you. You can always drop me a line at feedback@epostle.net. We're on all the usual socials. Do check us out. And, of course, at inissues.org. And, of course, we're constantly trying to make things a little bit better, so do bear with us as we do the revamp of the main Epostle site. Hopefully soon that'll get finished. I want to take this opportunity to thank you for listening to us and wish you all the best. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vosken, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step with some more surprises. Splash, splash.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath. Cut out!